From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The Sun-Times is reporting this morning Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan was secretly recorded by the FBI trying to secure a developer's business for Madigan's private law firm.
It happened in 2014 as the developer sought state assistance to build a hotel in Chinatown. Madigan denies any wrongdoing.
So according to an explosive Sun-Times report, Solis wore a wire because he was under investigation for backing plans by developers in exchange for favors.
The feds have listened to more than 18,000 of Solis' phone calls.
The biggest picture in the paper today is of Mike Madigan. And we also have conversations of Danny Solis talking to Mike Madigan. But is there a Madigan corruption story there? I sure didn't read it in the Sun-Times.
An allegation is made that Mr. Solis was trying to direct private benefits to Mr. Madigan in exchange for public action. But it doesn't indicate that Madigan was in on the scheme, at least based on what we know now.
There's new information tonight about a legal battle involving powerful House Speaker Mike Madigan. He's accused of putting sham candidates on the 2016 ballot to increase his chances of winning. Tonight, the Tribune has obtained a copy of Madigan's deposition in that case. There are some interesting connections and not many answers from Madigan.
Well, the Illinois House Speaker, Michael Madigan, dominating the news this week. First, the Chicago Sun-Times breaking that story that Madigan recorded on FBI wiretaps, part of an investigation into a Chicago alderman. Then the Chicago Tribune obtaining copies of a five-hour deposition of Madigan, part of a federal lawsuit that alleges he put up sham candidates to siphon votes away from a well-funded opponent in the 2016 elections. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House Editor, and Daisy Contreras, IPR State House Reporter. And joining us by phone today from Chicago and the Chicago Sun-Times is the columnist Mark Brown. And Mark, it's good to have you on.
Glad to be here.
Mark, I'm going to start with you. Anytime we hear someone was recorded on a wiretap, we think about past corruption cases. Fill us in, though, on what we know regarding this one, and especially the speaker's role, as far as we know it right now, into what was recorded on those wiretaps.
Okay. Well, what we reported this week, we at Sun-Times obtained a copy of an application for a search warrant on Alderman Danny Solis, who is the zoning committee chairman of the city council. And to get the application, they kind of lay out a case of what Danny Solis has been doing wrong during a period of 2 years where they had been listening in on his phone calls. But what at the start of them listening in on their phone calls, they had a businessman in Chinatown who was trying to develop a hotel. He's a guy who had been in some other trouble, and so he agreed to be a cooperator, apparently against Solis. And then, kind of out of nowhere, the way it's explained in this document that we have, Solis says, "Hey, do you know Madigan?" And the guy says, "Yes, well, I need to take you in to see Madigan." Well, he set up a meeting. The guy goes in, and the wire again here, the person doing the recording is this this businessman, and it's they did video and audio, and they go into Speaker Madigan's law office, and Speaker Madigan pitches him on why he's got to, you know, why you should give your real estate business, real estate tax business to him because they do these appeals, right? Now, separately from that, in an aside, Solis tells them, you know, if you go with Madigan, the guy says, "Well, I need this zoning change." He says this to Solis with Madigan out of the room. And Solis assures him, "If you hire Madigan, you're going to get anything you want." Now, Madigan's not part of that. But, I mean, you kind of got to ask, well, why is he having the zoning committee chairman walk a client into him? So certainly there's a period in there where there's a speaker and Solis have a conversation outside the presence of the guy doing the taping. So again, you have to wonder, well, what was Madigan and Solis's understanding of what was going on there? Now, Solis, we now know, is cooperating with the investigation, has been cooperating since 2016, has been wearing a wire. We know he wired up against Alderman Burke. Alderman Burke has now been charged. Obviously, the question has to be, did he subsequently also wire up again against Speaker Madigan? So that may be a more long-winded explanation than you want, but well, that's it.
And I think you pointed out something there, Mark, that this was not something that just happened, you know, a week ago or a month ago. This goes back a number of years. It might be people saying, well, if they haven't done anything yet, if the feds have not, you know, brought charges against somebody in that amount of time, maybe there's nothing there. But is that the way
to
look at this?
Well, that's a possibility, but it was in 2014 that this happened. If you figure a five-year statute of limitations hasn't run yet, it will be running rather shortly, I would think. But that is a possibility that there wasn't anything there. There is a huge ongoing investigation that has been playing out, and they made, you know, even by the time we catch this glimpse into things in 2016, they had 18,000 calls of Danny Solis's that they've intercepted. I forget how many calls of Burke's that we know, that something like 10,000 that they'd intercepted. So, you know, this is clearly an investigation where somebody has been trying to build to get the big targets.
Brian, when you hear this, I mean, you know, as Mark mentioned, this, you know, Madigan out of the room when some of these things were said, but it still doesn't quite pass the smell test. It almost makes you think something is up there. I mean, I don't want to, you know, put us out on a limb here, but at the same time, it does raise the antenna a bit.
I mean, look, Michael Kinsley famously said that when you're talking about, you know, public controversy, the scandal isn't always the illegal behavior. The scandal is what's legal. And I think that this is an interesting glimpse in, you know, if you give the most innocent explanation here that I think I can imagine, which is Solis felt the need to, you know, somehow make an offering before the altar of House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democratic Party Chairman Michael Madigan, and try and bring clients his way, even without Madigan's direction. This seems to be the Chicago way, right? This is how politics works in Illinois. And I, you know, so that's there's nothing necessarily illegal about that. In fact, I saw some former prosecutor quoted in a story somewhere this week saying, you know, quote, the Chicago way is not technically illegal. That's why these cases are hard to prove. You actually have to have some sort of wire fraud or mail fraud or something like that oftentimes to show something was improper here. And, you know, from what we know about the speaker, he is an exceedingly careful individual. He does not own a cell phone, reportedly, although he, you know, if he's talking on a landline and the FBI is recording the other person, then, you know, he could still be his conversations could be captured that way. But from everything we've heard of him, he is exceedingly cautious, and he probably doesn't need to sort of spell out, you know, a quid pro quo. People know that you know, if you make the speaker happy, it's better for your career in politics.
And I think it's also worth noting, Brian, that, you know, yeah, Rauner also ran a relentless campaign against Madigan over the last few years, and it definitely picked up steam during the gubernatorial race. At one point, Rauner was calling on the future attorney general to help prosecute Madigan for wrongdoings, and Rauner never really specified what he thought those were. And also this week, the Sun-Times reported that Rauner is hopeful something will come out of the Ed Burke and Danny Solis investigation, and that Madigan is caught for doing something worthy of a prosecution.
Rauner did always say that he thought that it was within the a property tax representation work that he thought the speaker was committing illegal acts, that he, nature of the existence of that, of those relationships was corrupt. But, I mean, I will say that is always where he pointed the finger.
Charlie, you've followed the speaker's career for many years now, decades, and you've seen other people raise these types of arguments, and also, you know, not just Governor Rauner, but many people before that. When you read what you've read this week from, you know, from the different newspapers that have covered this issue, what's your take on that?
I guess it gets down to the fact, as was said earlier, Michael Madigan is a very careful, controlled individual. I would be very surprised if he did anything overtly that could be interpreted as being a criminal offense. So I would be shocked if something comes out on one of these wiretaps or from whatever other means of surveillance the feds are using, where Madigan says, "You give me this and I'll give you that." I would be flabbergasted. Now, the bigger question, as was alluded to earlier, is it appropriate for legislators to have outside business interests, that people looking for favorable treatment from the General Assembly or from a leader would go to that individual for their private services to kind of curry favor? That's a broader question, I think, than Mike Madigan, because as I think we'll all recognize, you can do things that are legal but may not be ethical or may not present your career or your activities in the best possible light.
And Mark, a few weeks ago, we talked a lot on this show about Ed Burke, and for people that weren't quite sure who he was, especially people outside of Chicago, my guess is that fewer people know Danny Solis. Can you tell us about him and then also some of the other information that has come out this week and some other reporting?
Well, Danny Solis is, I forget how many years he's been on the city council now, but something like 25 years. Honestly, not a guy known to me to be, aggressively venal. We do underestimate these guys from time to time. He comes out of a community organization, Hispanic community group called UNO, that became more politicized after he left and has been part of a lot of mischief up here. But the other allegations, and then he's a close ally of Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and he was installed as the zoning committee chairman after Alderman Bill Banks stepped down. So the other allegations are that he took Viagra and visits were arranged to a massage parlor where he received more than the massage. He liked a nice ending, as he put it. And this was from a lobbyist, government consultant guy who says he is a close friend of Danny's, and but he was representing a company that was trying to get some help on its water bill. This is a company that operates street cleaning equipment and had been used to hooking up to the fire hydrant and using its water, and all of a sudden the city decided to change how it was charging for that. It was going to cost them a lot of money, and they needed some help, and they were trying to use Danny to get him to help.
Brian, what has Speaker Madigan, or at least his camp, said about all of this week? I know they put out a statement.
Yeah, so Madigan, through his attorney, Heather Wire Vaught, issued a statement to the Sun-Times. It says the speaker recalls attending several meetings with Alderman Solis over the past 5 years, including meetings with individuals in need of legal representation. If indeed some of his conversations were being recorded, the speaker did not know that, but he has no concern if they were. The speaker has no recollection of ever suggesting that he would take official action for a private law firm client or potential client. To our knowledge, neither the speaker nor his law firm is under investigation. And this tracks with what the speaker has said in the past when he's been challenged about this intersection of his private business and his government and political roles. The Chicago Tribune, about 9 years ago now, 2010, had a big story they unveiled called the Madigan Rules. And they reported that there were instances they found, or they thought, where some of his private legal clients benefited from things that he had done as a public official, like building a private road behind a shopping mall, or having a road behind a shopping mall repaved, and securing state money for this tollway interchange expansion. And there's another one where a developer was looking for state money. And Madigan at that time said he had a personal code of conduct, an actual written code of conduct, which he furnished, made public at that time, and it explained that, you know, he never does anything and he will recuse himself if a private client asks for some sort of action. But again, there's a line here, and even if things aren't illegal, there's a question that the public needs to resolve, or maybe more to the point, the House Democratic Caucus needs to resolve. Is this ethical and the behavior you want to see from your leaders and public officials?
And we haven't heard from anybody within that caucus raising any ruckus about this week, have we? I mean, I think everybody's kept pretty quiet.
That convenient cold snap, even though the Senate, both the House and Senate were scheduled to be in all week, and the Senate did have committee hearings and was here all week. The House used the cold snap as its reason for gaveling in for just an hour or two and then getting out of town. So we haven't really had them in Springfield. People were back in their districts hunkering down from the cold weather.
Mark, before we move on from this, let me just, I think there are some people out there thinking, oh, this spells, you know, really bad news for Michael Madigan. But we've heard that before. We've heard, and certainly his opponents are many, and we hear from those who are maybe more wishful thinking sometimes. He's about as much of a Teflon type guy as we have seen in Illinois politics through the years. Does this one feel any different to you, at least from what we know right now?
Well, I see nothing, again, like you guys, I see nothing. They don't have him, or they did not have him at that point. You know, that is the situation described there, again, is, you know, I have ethical concerns about it, but they didn't have him necessarily in an illegal action unless Danny Solis can close the loop. And even if he could, would his testimony be enough? And like Brian said, you know, it could have just been a political thing where he said, remember me at election time, or didn't even say that. So, you know, I do think this is different. I do think that they clearly were targeting him, and that they were, you know, they have multiple cooperators and they have multiple people wired up, and they got a lot of ways in this time. So, you know, whether they got him or others, we'll see.
You know, I have
a question about that. It occurs to me in the case of Ed Burke, they went in, raided his offices, raided his law offices, raided his city council offices. To the best of my knowledge, and you can correct me, Mark, if I'm wrong, they've not done similarly with Madigan.
They have not. But you should also keep in mind, I don't believe they were planning for us to put the story out here that we did. It could have disrupted a lot of plans and timing. So, you know, who knows? But no, they have not done that yet. But we definitely believe there are a lot of shoes left to drop here on this case.
And that's what's interesting, and I feel like we've been through these cycles before, where, you know, the opposition party, the Republicans, try to, you know, launch one of these Fire Madigan campaigns, and it's never seemed to work. And Bruce Rauner pegged his entire reelection campaign really on that, and much of his administration on attempting to destroy Madigan, and that didn't work. But I feel like last year we had this Me Too series of incidents that blew up in the speaker's organization. And there's another story we can talk about this week about the speaker giving a deposition. And when you read that and read the list of people from his political organization who were deposed, one of his aides named Quinn and Kevin Quinn and another aide, Shaw DeCremer and Tim Mapes, all people who have been fired or resigned from the Magen organization over allegations of anything from harassment and bullying behavior to really aggressively pursuing a relationship with a subordinate that did not find that welcome. And the confluence of that, plus this, plus a Democratic governor who has essentially limitless campaign money and is not really dependent on the speaker for that, for the cash spigot in terms of political campaigning, and has the backing of the unions, the governor does, which are big Democratic fundraisers. So this confluence of things, it could really be a turning point if the Democrats, if Governor Pritzker decides that, you know, they're better off without Speaker Madigan. Now, the governor has been very cautious and reserved throughout his campaign and this week after these revelations came out. He said, you know, we need to wait until all the facts are in, as he often does in these cases. But he has talked about conflicts of interests, and he wants to make sure that legislators are not voting on things where they have private business interests, which, of course, goes to the allegations in that Tribune story from nearly a decade ago. And if there are other shoes to drop here, could go to this story as well. But, I mean, not based on what we know so far.
Well, J.B. Pritzker has that situation in the background. At the same time, he's got to deliver a budget address here very soon. And we don't know exactly what he's going to say in it and what some of the priorities that he may make for that. We've heard some different talk. But one of the things that does seem to be more on a fast track, at least among some Democrats right now, is raising the minimum wage in the state of Illinois. Daisy, you've been following this.
Yes, Senate Democrats are really rushing this minimum wage measure through. A draft should be filed sometime next week. Word has it that Pritzker wants this piece of legislation passed before he is set to deliver his budget address February 20. So this timeline is pretty tight. But there are still many stakeholders currently on the table that want their ideas heard, employers in the retail, health, and restaurant industries that want to ensure this doesn't affect them in the long run. Business groups have been opposed to a $15 minimum wage increase in the past. Governor Bruce Rauner vetoed a proposal that would increase the current $8.25 an hour to $15 an hour over 5 years. Some stakeholders want this new proposal to have a longer phase-in time, maybe 7 to 10 years. Others are proposing that Illinois follow a similar model to that already in place in New York State and Oregon, where there is a tiered minimum wage system adjusted for cost of living by region. The argument is that smaller cities across Illinois, central and southern Illinois, have a lot lower cost of living than, for example, Chicago or the Collier counties. But Senator Kimberly Lightford, she's a Maywood Democrat and the chief sponsor for this measure, has said that this could limit upward mobility and that it isn't a fair approach to the minimum wage.
Charlie, whether or not somebody agrees with the idea of raising the minimum wage, this fast-track idea of this, usually when I've seen the legislature move, trying to move something so quickly, problems result from that. Is it a good idea to try to do this just to coincide with a budget address?
Yeah, I would advise against it. I mean, from a PR perspective, it probably looks nice. You get the big headlines and all that. But were I in charge, I would argue, let's slow it down. Let's listen from everybody. Let's see if we can move a compromise that maybe would phase it in over a longer period of time. Maybe we would have regional differences, because to argue that you need the same minimum wage to be able to afford to live in Chicago as you would need in Vienna is ludicrous. And looking at it long term, if you push it through without any of these accommodations made to the legitimate concerns of the business community, you're going to wind up with roll calls with no Republicans on them. And that opens you up to all kinds of charges going against you being Pritzker, saying, I want to work with both parties, I want to work with everybody, open door, and all the rest of that bipartisanship. In my mind, it would make more sense to make modifications that would bring some Republican votes on board for the bills. there's really no need to do it, you know, post haste.
And reportedly, Pritzker has been rejected. You know, he doesn't want this whole tiered system based on geography. He really just wants the $15 an hour across the board for the whole state.
And that's something.
And this is the doctor. I should say it's the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, right? On the one hand, Pritzker wants to be a uniter, who is, you know, I'm going to govern and invite everybody to the table, unlike the last guy. On the other hand, he wants to be a progressive hero and, you know, push through all these. And he feels like he made a campaign pledge for $15 an hour, and you know, he made that campaign statement in Southern Illinois and in Chicagoland, and so he wants to follow through on that. And then he's going to have to choose at some point.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, we've been talking about the upcoming budget. There was a report that came out from Comptroller Susana Mendoza, and she was sounding the alarm that we have to try and do a balanced budget. She pointed out that the budget that was balanced on paper for the current fiscal year, with a surplus of the neighborhood of maybe $11 million on a close to $40 billion base, was way out of whack, because we're not going to sell the Thompson Center. We're not going to realize all kinds of savings from a new buyout program for people and the pension systems. And as a result, she's predicting that the bill backlog, which is now about $7.5 billion, is going to grow by $1.5 billion, $2 billion. And she's trying to encourage the legislature to rein in some of the costs and look at ways of generating more revenue. And, of course, she's the person who's sitting there with the stack of bills having to figure out, who do I pay first?
Daisy?
The opioid alternative program began accepting patients earlier this week. This is something that Governor Bruce Reiner signed into law last year. And as of Thursday, people were finally able to replace their opioid medication, if they chose to, with cannabis, as long as their doctor fills out a certification form. This program has been designed to combat the opioid epidemic in the state, and it's also the first of its kind in the country.
And Brian.
Well, another interesting Sun-Times report, this one on former State Representative Dan Burke, the brother of the Chicago alderman who was indicted. Dan Burke has not been charged with any wrongdoing, but he did lose a primary election last year based in part on the changing demographics of his district. And he decided to retire from the legislature before his term was up, right before his brother was indicted. And he is now collecting almost $160,000 in pensions from both a city of Chicago jobs he's held in the past, and his time as a state legislator. And that's going to go up pretty significantly because of some other changes in rules that reward legislators who have more than 20 years in office. The majority of people who get state pensions do not get these sort of huge gold-plated pensions, but whenever these stories come up in the news, it often gins up a lot of public angst and anger over the way some people take advantage of the system.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of the broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and our guest Mark Brown of the Chicago Sun-Times. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.